88% of the workweek is spent communicating, typing, talking, and going back and forth on topics until everyone is on the same page. It's time for a change. It's time for Grammarly. Grammarly's AI ensures your team gets the point across the first time, eliminating misunderstandings and streamlining collaboration. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences. Whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon in just one click. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly's AI boosts buy-in and moves work forward. It integrates seamlessly with over 500,000 apps and websites, is implemented in days, and is IT approved. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to elevate their communication. Visit grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise ready AI.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Hey there. Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. Before we get started, as always, we want to thank our new patrons. Dan Hayes, Mal Jade, Laura Alger, Shannon Moe, Dylan Eicher, and Melissa Payet. Thank you so much for your support. And welcome to the Pod Fam. If you want to hear your name immortalized in audio, then you should check us out on Patreon. Our patrons get access to an exclusive RSS feed where they never have to listen to ads. And tiers $5 and above get access to over 4 years of bonus stories, plus perks like stickers and merch. If that sounds good to you, then just click the link in the show notes to learn more. And without further ado, today's story is The Puppeteer by Madeline Smith. Are you ready? Sit back, turn down the lights, and now, on with the show. A gust of wind removed the thin baby hairs tucked away in my tight bun. I carried the suitcase where I'd packed up my entire life out to the front porch. Daddy grabbed my bare arm, halting me on the edge of the hand-built wooden fence. He hadn't touched me in almost 5 years, not since Mama went home to Jesus. I looked up to see the dark scruff of his face and shaggy hair for what I knew would be the last time for a long while, if not the last time ever.
"You make sure you make that money and come right on back here."
As he said it, the vodka on his breath stung my nose. I nodded. The only issue with his statement was that I didn't plan to return here. And even if I did find fortune, it would never be brought within a 20-mile radius of him. His lips parted, then tightened stiffly. The unknown must have choked him up. In what had become the new normal in our last 5 years together, I hadn't seen him show any ounce of an emotion that hadn't been anger. He spoke up again.
"Be good. Be great."
Our moment was interrupted by the rolling tires of the white Ford approaching. My eyes shifted away from Daddy and on to the man my entire future depended on. His shoes hit the gravel as he smiled a wicked grin. He walked around the car, and then he stood only feet away from us.
"You must be Mr. DeWitt. I'm Nick Hommel."
He was charismatic, and he offered a hand to Daddy. Worlds collided with that unsteady handshake.
"I hear you're taking my daughter away to be a star. You really think she's gonna make a star?"
There was no hesitation in Nick's response.
"Your daughter's already a star. It just took fate that I was lucky enough to find her tapping that night in the pub across town. The only thing I plan to do is let your star shine.
I felt my cheeks heat up as he showered me with compliments. No one had praised me this way, not since Mama. Thunder rolled over the hills. It was loud enough to know that something bad was on its way.
We'd better get going. I want to ensure that she settles in nicely and meets the rest of the troop. She'll need a good night's rest before we hit the road tomorrow.
Nick took my bag, and he vanished to stow it away. A clear indication that I should say my final goodbyes. Daddy started to speak. He wasn't able to look at me. He said he knew that he hadn't been much of a father, but that I'd given him the best 18 years of his life. I smiled, unsure how true a statement like that could be with the history of those 18 years.
I love you, Daddy. Take care.
Without a hug, I headed toward the car. Nick was waiting with the door open. His hand took mine, lowering me into the leather passenger seat of his fine vehicle. And before I knew it, my childhood home and memories faded into the distance. I had finally been set free. Nick slipped a cigarette between his teeth before sliding the leather case toward me.
Smoke?
I held my hand up.
No, thank you. Mama told me they were bad for your skin.
Well, that's what makeup's for.
I felt a little sting at the invalidation. We zipped through the busy streets.
You said that you trained in ballet.
Yes, sir, as a little girl.
Good, good. That's what our troop specializes in. I think that you're going to fit in perfectly.
The only problem was that I didn't want to fit in. I wanted to stand out. Nick showed me around the camp, introducing me like a prized pony that would breathe new life into the show. After a dinner, prepared by the one chef whose name I already forgot, I grew tired, yawning relentlessly. The loudness of our table amplifying with each drunken minute. I nudged Nick under the table to get his attention, and he shot a look at me after downing yet another shot of whiskey.
What's the matter?
Would it be all right for me to go to sleep?
And miss your welcome party?
Nick stood up, reaching for a glass. Then, he snatched a knife from the dinner table. An empty, unknown feeling crept through my toes and ran up my spine. He turned the knife on me. I felt the cool blade graze past my neck. His eyes had gone mad for that split moment. But before I could react, the knife tapped his glass, ringing in a toast. The entire troop turned their attention to him.
To our newest member, Miss Betty DeWitt.
One of the men slurred.
A shot!
Pointing limply at a clear bottle of liquor. I shook my head.
I don't drink, but thank you all for this. It's been a really long day. I should go to bed. I'll see you all tomorrow morning.
I left no one the time to stop me. I'd already left the table and rushed out of the dining tent, back toward the trailer Nick had gifted me. Before I could make it through the door, A strong set of arms pulled me down from the two steps I had climbed. I was back on the dirt ground. I was released as I made contact with the surface, standing level with Nick.
That was very bold of you to leave so suddenly.
Nick gave me a stern stare as he spoke down to me. I hadn't realized how tall he was until now. Unsure of what to say, I spoke without thinking.
I was tired, and I don't party. I hate the smell of liquor.
Lightning struck overhead. It couldn't have been but a mile or so away. Nick ignored the sky and the danger that came with it.
Well, there's no reason to defend yourself. People who do what they want on their own terms are the only people worth a damn in this world.
Well, thank you.
He looked me up and down with a smooth seductiveness, and my entire body halted in rejection at the thought of him seeing me as more than a performer. He looked back at the noisy tent.
Anyways, I guess I'll have to enjoy it for the both of us. Sleep well, darling.
The trailer that he had prepared for me smelled like lilies and expensive perfume, and not the cheap kind that Daddy used to buy for Mama at the drugstore. I wandered to the bed, where I found a welcome basket. My hand shook as I read my name on the envelope and tore it open. It was from Nick.
To Betty, your beauty, grace, and talent captivated me in a way that I never knew possible. There was no way that I couldn't have you as part of my collection. One of my own, if you will. I know that you will bring something special to our troop and put us on the map as something newer. Enjoy the gifts. They're all for you. Yours, Nick.
Tossing the letter aside, I rummaged through the gifts. My stomach churned at the two sets of lingerie, folded neatly under three bottles of vodka. Three months later, soft waves crashed only a few feet ahead of me as I puffed the poison into my lungs. I heard the footsteps getting closer with each wave.
Coney Island's beautiful this time of year.
I turned over my left shoulder, lowering the cigarette, instantly noticing the frustration smeared across his face.
This is the furthest north I've ever been.
Nick stopped next to me, letting out a deep sigh.
Well, get used to it. I doubt we're leaving. I don't know what we're gonna do, darling.
With what?
Well, I have a wife that hates me, but I guess that's besides the point right now.
He stuffed his hands deep in his pockets, his eyes watching the rolling tides. Regret churned in my stomach as I glanced at the shimmery rock on my ring finger. The wife he spoke of was me.
Well, what's the point?
I asked, taking another inhale of smoke.
We have no money.
Now listen here. First of all, this isn't we. You also had no money before I was in the picture. You can continue to fault me, but you chose to be here.
You lied to me.
No, you misheard. I told you that I would let you be the star performer, and that's what I gave you. You just inferred that that also meant money.
I nonchalantly wiped away a tear, refusing to let his power over me show.
People don't want to pay to watch the ballet anymore. Hell, they hardly even have the money to keep the power on. We need to be less of a performance and more of a spectacle.
I put the cigarette out and turned to my husband.
How do you suggest we rebrand without any money?
Have you ever heard of George Mantell?
I shook my head.
He was spectacular. He was a visionary.
He turned on me, making eye contact.
He was a puppeteer.
I couldn't help myself from smiling, and I had to hide it with my hand.
Are you suggesting that a children's puppet show will get us out of our financial struggles?
You know, Europeans adored puppetry in the 1920s.
His pencil-thin mustache was twitching. I knew that twitch meant that his anger was rising.
Okay, but this is America, and it's 1938. No one's paying to watch dolls on strings.
Well, then you come up with something. It's not like anyone's lining up to pay for your pirouettes.
Before I knew it, I found myself alone yet again. My hand slipped as the trailer door slammed open, and my perfect scarlet lip was ruined as I ran onto my chin with the lipstick. I turned to Nick.
What?
Oh, there's no need to put it on. The show's canceled.
You can't be serious.
My arms gripped the chair as I whipped around to judge whether he was telling the truth or not.
Oh, I'm serious. We sold zero tickets.
My eyes fell to the floor in defeat. Nick's hand reached for the bottle on the bed. He drank it swiftly, tossed it behind him, and left the trailer without another word. I looked at my reflection in the mirror. I was thinner now than I had been 3 months ago. I was bony and unhealthy. I was the mangy toy children donated after loving it too hard and too fast. I stood up and paced the trailer that I shared with my husband. Why I chose to marry Nick is still a mystery to me. After 2 months of him obsessing over me, I guess I convinced myself that I could at least have access to his money if I gave in and married him. It was a foolish fantasy. There was no money. My hand ran along his bedside table, creeping warily. The lock that entrapped his personal items had been left undone. With a swift glance, I knew that there was no reason to fear him catching sight of me invading his privacy. He was on his way to the rest of the troop, where they would all engage in their favorite form of bonding. While I had given in to smoking, I still stuck true to my vow against alcohol. I won't allow myself to become my father. The drawer was stiff as I forced it open. Quickly, I became underwhelmed. There was only a Bible, a few stray poker chips, and tiny liquor bottles. I moved the Bible to find a tattered journal. Taking it, I sat on the bed, flipping through the worn pages. The first entry was 11 years ago. He was 23, and he had just started recruiting talent for his first ever show. It was a freak show that featured 9 human oddities. Disgust flooded me as I read how he chalked them up to nothing more than wasted life. I kept reading, and I saw that his freak show was a success for the 4 years that it ran through rich neighborhoods in southern Tennessee. Things began to flop towards the end, but it didn't matter. A fire broke out only 2 weeks after he confessed failure, leaving every performer dead. He showed no empathy for any of the victims in his writing. It was as if they had never existed. He headed west to Colorado and lived off the show's income for a while. But he blew through the money on women and alcohol. And before long, he was setting up shop for his next adventure. A family fun review with Southern charm brought directly to California. It was a smash, according to Nick. He spoke of a girl named Maria, a cute little number that sang like heaven. He had written of her months before she joined the review. A later entry claims that Maria's parents didn't support her dreams, which allowed him the angle to convince her that the review would make her a star. He wrote that she rejected him when he confessed his love, saying that she was with Benjamin, the banjo player. Nick only wrote of her once more after that, in an update 4 weeks later, to state that the review had taken its final bow. Benjamin had murdered Maria before ending his own life. The third act in his showmanship was the ballet troupe. I smiled as I read of its humble beginnings. A traveling ballet with strong, focused performers. I could sense the growing substance abuse as time passed in Nick's entries. Focus faded as their strength crumbled. Betty DeWitt was scribed 8 months ago for the first time. I read what he had to say about me. Betty DeWitt may be the kindest soul I have ever known, but he didn't know me. He met me 4 months ago. He wrote,
"She works as a seamstress in town. I know her soul to be pure because I watched an elderly woman struggling to count out enough money to pay her. Betty put her finger to her lips and smiled and pushed the money back into the woman's hands, giving her the dress free of charge. I know that Betty needed that money. Her home isn't much to look at and her shoes have holes in them."
Panic paralyzed me. The journal slipped out of my hands as the reality struck me. I had been stalked, prepped, and preyed on. There was a stirring outside, shocking me back to life. I hid the journal back and shut the nightstand just as the trailer door slammed into the wall.
"Oh? What are you doing on my side?"
"I was only picking up the socks you left out,"
I lied, bending over and retrieving them.
"Ah. So, I know that you thought that puppetry was a horrible idea, but I have something to show you."
I looked past him with discomfort, refusing to make direct eye contact.
"Oh yeah? What is it?"
"Oh, just a little experiment I came up with. Something the world has never seen before."
He walked around to me with a big grin on his face, and he took my hand in his. My clammy hands shook as he interlaced our fingers. He asked me why I was so tense as he drug me into the night. It was dead outside as I scanned the fields of this deserted place we had settled in New York. Every tent was dark.
"Where are we going?"
I asked, fearful, as he led me into the tree line, far from our camp and far from civilization.
"Why, to see my surprise."
He gripped my hand tighter as we disappeared into the darkness. After countless silent minutes, we stood face to face with an old red barn. The siding was falling off, revealing its ugly insides. Too scared to run or cry for help, I stood tall at his side, in the spotlight shining from the one overhead light in the front of the barn.
"Are you ready?"
I gave a shy nod, causing him to release his hold and stand beside me. My back met his front side, sending a pulse through me and straightening my posture to perfection. His right hand covered my eyes, while his left hand opened the barn door. We stepped inside, and he led me forward.
Now, on three, I want you to close your eyes. One, two.
I heard him messing with his clothes while I waited, and then I heard the click.
Three.
The second I opened my eyes, his right arm dropped to hold me in a lock, and his left hand put the barrel on my left temple. Deja vu ran through me as I recalled that the bullet wound killing Maria had entered her left temple. A gasp escaped my mouth while I looked before me. All 11 of my fellow ballerinas hung before me on a mock stage, each mutilated in their own way.
The show had to go on, darling. You weren't the only one who learned about our little money crisis. They all plan to walk out on me tomorrow.
I gasped.
So you slaughtered them?
No, of course not, Betty. They're puppets.
He moved me closer, taking me to the single chair before us. Ropes were placed under it.
You get to be our first audience member.
He slammed me down into the seat and tied me to it, threatening to shoot me if I squirmed. Nick's lips pressed to the top of my head before he went backstage to start his show. My feet tapped anxiously as I examined what I was looking at. Renee, dressed in her white costume, stained crimson with her blood. I squinted and saw that he had removed her eyes and exchanged them for buttons. After a glance, I noticed that all of their eyes had been stolen and replaced with cheap buttons.
Ladies and gentlemen, I invite you to be amazed as you become a part of history. I proudly present the world's first human marionette show.
I watched in horror as Renee's right arm lifted toward the ceiling. He controlled all of them with long strings sewn through their palms and tied to a large wooden cross brace near the ceiling. Nick manipulated Harry's arms, making him bow excessively following a skit where he had maniacally laughed. A ripping sound echoed through the barn on the fifth raise to bow. Blood poured out as Nick continued the act, Harry's limp body lulling to the right side. His left arm had been ripped off at the socket, leaving it hanging from the string, exposing the bone. As the shock subsided, terror took its place. The twisted performance made me sick, the vile vomit rising in the back of my throat. Nick appeared on the stage with a mad smile as he clapped approvingly of his work.
Well, what do you think?
He beamed at me with satisfaction and pride.
I think you're sick!
I shouted at him, unleashing my emotions uncontrollably. Wailing rang out from him as he jumped from the stage, aggressively stomping toward me. In my state of disassociation, I hadn't even felt the vulgar cries exit my body as they erupted from deep inside. His hand revealed a knife, and he stood before me, grinning. I sobbed, knowing the inevitable truth that loomed before me.
You know, there's only one thing missing from the show, darling.
He wiped the blade on his coat, and then he held it above me, staring at his reflection in the spotless steel. His eyes dropped to me one last time.
We need our star back on stage.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. If you like what you heard, stop what you're doing and leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. This was The Puppeteer, written by Madeline Smith. Narrated by me, Brooke Jeanette. Nick was Ian Epperson. Editing and sound design by Brooke Jeanette. Additional assistance from Bridget Freeman. Our producer level patrons are Tattooed Fox, Sean Geary, Anthony Diaz, Michael Vasquez, Amy Harper, Jackie Kay, Delta Tango, Chantel Payne, Nick, Stephanie Klinger, Jake R., Abigail Perez, Emily Toll, Amanda Lee, Cozumine, K-Cup Chuck, and Adeline. Thank you so much for your support. Click the link in the show notes to learn more about joining us on Patreon. And check us out on social media. You can find us on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram under Pod13. And you can join the Facebook group for 13 Podcast. Just look for the logo, and you'll find links to all of that in our show notes. If you'd like to submit a story to be performed on the show, or if you'd like to contact us about anything else, you can get in touch at info@13podcast.com. You'll find submission guidelines and other info on our website, 13podcast.com. And you can find that in the show notes, too. Bridget Freeman is backstage, pulling the strings. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.